Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Insider Podcast. I'm Jeff Bergerson, joined as always by Zachary Turcotte.
How's it going, my friend?
It's going well. It's Memorial Week, always a fun tournament. I'm looking forward to it. Be sure to check us out. You can find us at fantasygolfinsider.com for all of your research needs for golf betting, fantasy golf, DFS golf. Tons of great research tools. We write articles each and every week talking strategy and who we're picking for that week. So be sure to jump on board, become a premium member. Super reasonable, one of the best values in the fantasy industry today. It's fantasygolfinsider.com. Zachary, we will definitely talk about milkshakes and the memorial in a minute, but let's talk a little bit about Colonial last week. I'm going to tell you, something happened to a roster that I had that I don't remember ever happening before. It might have happened, but in the past 10 years, I don't remember it. I had a 6-of-6 roster in some GPPs with the winner, and it did not cash.
Oh, that's rough. Eesh, man, that's that takes work.
Pretty special. And it was well into the money going into the weekend, and it took all five guys outside of Russell Henley to absolutely plummet down.
I bet I can guess one of them off the top
of my head. I don't know. I was plus 25 from my guys on Sunday. You got one of them?
Was Rio one of your guys? Because he shot a 79 for me on Saturday, you're just kind of beside yourself watching this. Like, how is this happening right now? The other three rounds, he's below 70, and he just out of nowhere fires a 79 on moving day. It's not even like everybody else is just getting chewed up on the course. You'd kind of get it. All right, maybe everybody's bad. Things just get bad. Conditions are tough. Nope. Just terrible golf. Just completely shat himself. So yeah, I was pretty sure that would be.
He was in a race with my other guys, Tom Hoagie. Yeah. He was up on the leaderboard for a little bit.
No, same with Rio. Yeah.
And Lucas Glover.
Oh yeah, he finished outside of the top 70. Yeah.
When he missed a 2-foot putt, I was like, "Oh, that's Lucas Glover for us."
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's a special lineup. Who were the other two?
Who else did I have? I can't remember at the minute.
Yeah, it was brutal. I had one of the more brutal beats for me on a cash game lineup on a Friday afternoon that I can remember for a long time. I already put it in my column. I was fired up enough that I actually started writing my recap immediately today. So yeah, I had Tony Finau. He missed the cut. Kind of kicking myself even for playing him. I guess I shouldn't have trusted him. But then it looked like I was going to get 5-of-6. Shooter Sean. Yellow Mirage, he's rallying. He's playing amazing on the back nine. He gets himself to -3. So it even feels like he's got a cushion going into the final hole on Friday, the ninth hole. He's playing the front nine to finish. And all he needs is a bogey to get to the weekend. He hits his tee shot. Perfect tee shot, center of the fairway. He's 154 yards out from the middle of the fairway, needing only to make bogey to go to the weekend. And he ends up making a double bogey to miss the cut.
Classic.
Oh, God. I mean, that's just the worst. You're not even really thinking about the cut at that point. You're just like, it's fine. Hopefully he just pars it. But bogey, I don't. From the fairway, he didn't even screw up the tee shot. It was unbelievable. And,
I had Oberg. I did the Oberg Henley stack.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I had, how do you say his name? Bouchow?
Oh, Boshu.
Boshu. Yeah. Zachary. Boshu.
Yep.
Yep. And it did cash in some contests. Like, I've had it in a lot of different contests. It cashed in some, but did not cash in the $25. It cashed in the $5.
Yeah.
But isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it can be really tricky. Yeah, so it was up and down. So yeah, Tony and he missed the cut, and the shooter Sean missed the cut. My 4-6, I still had a pretty good chance. It was in the money on Saturday, but then Rio shoots a 79 and falls way back, and Cebes shoots a 74 on Sunday and wasted a pretty good effort out of Mac Meisner, who tied for third, because he was kind of pulling my lineup back up. But yeah, then I had Oberg at the top there, and a 17th place just isn't good enough for that price. He just couldn't seem to get things going, and it's just one or two shots here or there too, because the scoring is so tight, and there's so many guys that were bunched right in that, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 range. I mean, what a finish out of Russell Henley. I mean, that's one of the more unbelievably clutch efforts I've ever seen in my life. To birdie the last three holes, he hits from 15 feet, from 15 feet, and from 16 feet on the last three holes to come back and tie it. And then on the playoff hole, he hits his approach shot to 5 feet and then drills another birdie. I mean, man, just right in Eric Cole's eye. That's a brutal, brutal beat for a guy who was on the cusp of, you know, getting a huge breakthrough win for his career. I mean, just incredible golf out of Henley. And I had a good feeling on Henry. I wasn't originally planning on writing him up. I thought maybe I wouldn't have the funds, but he was just too good of a course fit for me to ignore. So,
yes,
you know, just going over and over it. And then his recent form, I felt like I can kind of see where things got sideways for him, but Colonial's that's just like a perfect Henley course outside of the grass type for the greens. I mean, if it were Bermuda, it would be perfect. But other than that, it's exactly where you want a guy like Henley. Even if his game has been just a little bit off from, you know, off the tee and then on approach, it's still one of those spots where he can definitely be above the rest of the field, especially in a field that's, you know, a little bit softer than, you know, what we're seeing this week from an elevated event. So it was a good tournament. I like courses that play like that. I like courses that
are
challenging and allow for at least a little bit of scoring. So you at least feel like there could be some birdies out there, but it's not a giveaway like Craig Ranch the previous week.
Yep.
So it was a fun event. It was a fun finish. And now we're back on track for these next 3 out of 4 weeks. We've got some elevated fields.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the Memorial this week. At Muirfield Village, Jack's Place. It's a long course, 7,569 yards, wide fairways, and he does that on purpose. He wants it to be similar to Augusta in that way. So it'll have some thick rough, there's no doubt about that, but the fairways are always wide. The greens are 5,000 square feet, so that's where it's a little bit different from Augusta, is the size of the greens. Water is in play on 13 of the holes. The last 2 years, Scotty has won, and he's won shooting minus 10 and minus 8. So it's a tough, tough test. It's going to be grueling. You generally see really high-level names winning this event, right? Scotty, Cantlay, Morikawa, Victor, right? I mean, these are top-tier guys.
Back in the day.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be a grind for them. But I like the course. I think it's always a fun week here. What do you use? It's not the easiest to come up with comp courses this week, is it? Because it seems like there are courses with wider fairways, different greens, green types. There's very few that I found that are similar.
Yeah, I kind of mixed it up a little bit because I had some from over the years where I had used previously, like Torrey Pines and Riviera I had on there, and Augusta I had on there. I have Quail Hollow. And then I kind of went into Grok on X just to see, like, what does AI think would be some decent comparable courses, and actually listed TPC Twin Cities was one that it thought was pretty comparable, which I can sort of see. There's not exactly, it's not ideal as far as a comp, but it's a longer course. It's a par 72. There's quite a bit of water.
Water.
You got grass greens. So Twin Cities was one that popped up there. I've got Bay Hill. I've got Innisbrook. So yeah, some that are a lot of courses that are more on the challenging side, more on the length side. Courses that have a lot of these spots also generally have like longer rough. So yeah, there wasn't anything that's perfect, but I thought those rules end up being fairly decent for courses on the more challenging side.
Let's look at the pricing on DraftKings, and we talk about this every week that Scotty's in the field. This, I put in my article, is a real test on whether to fade Scotty or not. I said last time he played, it was tough for me. I wanted to go in on him. I just ended up fading him like I have all season. He's won here the last 2 years. Third place finishes the two times before that. I think he's going to win one of these times.
Yeah,
I'm going to fade him again this week, Zachary.
Yeah, it's been fine for us so far. I just like the way that it opens up the rest of
your
salary cap space.
Yeah.
You leave him on the table, and that's like two other guys that you can pick in that top range to go along with it. There is a cut this week, so you can't screw around quite as much as you would otherwise. That's definitely something that's that's kind of important.
So the cut is going to be the top 50 and ties out of the 72 player field.
Yep. And we always lose a handful of highly owned guys. Just every single time we have a cut in one of these events, there'll be a couple of these guys that just nosedive for whatever reason. They're going to end up falling apart, but that's what makes it really challenging here to find those. You know, if you play Scotty, you're going to need to find a couple low owned guys in that low 7K, upper mid 6K range to put your team together. And yeah, I think I would just rather take multiple shots. Scotty has not been good enough at closing these things out. So, and you just look at the experiment. You know, it's not even like he's finishing like seventh or eighth and being close on the GV. I mean, he's finishing second, third, and he hasn't been anywhere near a winning lineup. So until he actually wins at one of these prices,
right?
Yeah, I think you could probably get away with it in like a cash game. If he wins in cash game, then you can afford like a missed cut or two and still get across the line. So he may make the cash game article. For on the GPP side, I think he's got to be out for a little while longer.
Fair enough. Yeah, I agree with you. It's not even that it's that difficult to own him this week, because I think there's a ton of good options in the 7 and even 6K range, and I will own a lot of those. It's just that I'm electing to own – you could own a 10K guy and a 9K guy, or a couple of 9s and an 8.
Yeah.
You can do a lot of stuff there, and I like guys like Oberg and Xander, and I even like Cantlay this week at 9,200. You can own all of them. I like Cam Young too.
Right. Yeah. So I just think from a cap space, I'd rather just have more bullets to fire.
Yep. Agreed.
Scotty comes back down to like 12.9, 12.5. If he ever comes back down into that range, then yeah, I think it'll make a little more sense. But with an event like this where you've seen marquee players win it as often as they have over the years, it just gets too tough. You're going to have a hard time getting Scotty and like Ludvig on the same roster together and liking what the rest of your team looks like. So I think that probably makes a lot of sense. I have got Ludvig. I'm probably just going to stick with him. Longer, tougher type of course, sort of a major type of course. I think that's where his game excels. Really good off the tee, really good as far as like long iron play is concerned. He's had two good finishes here the last couple of years. And prior to, 17th was actually disappointing for him. Prior to that, he had six top tens in his previous seven starts. So.
Yeah, we even talked about that last week, Zachary, how Oberg wasn't a great course fit for Colonial. Like the things he does well doesn't get rewarded all that much at Colonial. And it was just his price being so low and rosters being so easy to build with him on there that had him in my core, and his T17 finish wasn't good enough, but it was just, you know, the course fit didn't seem great. This week, it is really good because we have the wide open fairways. Just seems like a better fit for him. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I like longer, tougher types of courses, long iron play. It's just going to take away a lot more of the field that can't compete on this particular type of setup here. So, yeah, I think he's definitely somebody that I'll be monitoring for the rest of the season. Anytime we get these elevated fields on more challenging types of courses, he'll be a guy that's likely going to be in my core until he gets to, unless he gets way too expensive, which I definitely don't see coming anytime soon.
You also like Cam Young?
I think so. It's been a tricky one for him. This one here hasn't been great. I don't really know why. He's really struggled here over the years. His best finish was 25th a year ago. I do get a little bit nervous because this does tend to be a spot where guys who have trouble breaking through don't necessarily find their way and just crush it every year. Like Rory is a good example there, like 11-5. You would think this would be a spot where Rory would be able to play really well, and he just hasn't. I mean, this just hasn't been a spot for him. So I feel like this is one of those courses where course history probably weighs in a little bit extra for me. Something I'm writing about with Patrick Cantlay down there at 9,200. He's one of those guys where there's like four or five courses on the tour each year that you can just write it down, show up. He's going to play well for sure. And this has regularly been one of those spots. He's got a couple of wins, a handful of other top 10 finishes. So yeah, I think this is a spot for me where course history is weighted a little extra. So I think Cam Young has the ability to play well here, but it might just be one of those spots that he doesn't figure out on a regular basis.
I like Xander quite a bit, although he isn't a guy who has had huge high upside finishes here. It's just been kind of steady top 25 finish year after year. But at 9,800, we need a little bit more from him. But I think he's definitely capable of it. He's been playing really well, has good stats coming into it. He's a guy who is good statistically across the board, just a great all-around player. I like him, and you can actually stack him with Oberg, or you could stack him with Cantlay too.
I really like Matt Fitzpatrick at 9,600 there. He's had a few top 10 finishes here. Didn't finish particularly well last year, but this was right around the time where his game finally started to come together. And then the rest of the year, he was just on an incredible run. And he's already got three wins this season, had a nice finish at the PGA Championship to kind of get back on track after not such a great run at the Truist the previous week. So I think he's still a guy that could definitely be strong here. I like him quite a bit. Every part of his game, really outside of his putter, and his putter hasn't even been that bad. It's just been kind of average overall, but you know, off the tee, okay. Iron play has been really locked in, around the green play. He ranks first in terms of the last 16 rounds measured, second, in terms of strokes gained tee to green during that time and place. So I think Fitz is definitely a guy that I'm focused in on. I already kind of mentioned Cantlay. We're just kind of so-so at the PGA Championship. But prior to that, four straight finishes of 12 or better. Feels like his game is kind of starting to get locked back in. I like that price for him there. I think 9,200 is a good spot there for a guy who has a couple of wins here in the past.
The way my rosters are building, I don't own much in the high 8K range. I think the only 8K guy that I'm liking, there's a couple of them, but it's Justin Thomas at 8,400. Early in his career, he was really good here, has been quiet the last few years, but I think his upside and just the way his play has trended upwards over the past couple of months, 8,400 is super cheap. Again, you can easily put him on a roster with Oberg and Xander or Cantlay and have a guy who could possibly win the tournament.
I kind of like Ricky there a little bit at 8,500. This has traditionally been a course where he's been pretty good over the years, even when he hasn't been quite on his game. Two of the last 3 years, top 10 finishes there. Probably we'll see some ownership shake off of him after disappointing a lot of people last week. That price jumped up pretty high when he was on a pretty decent run, and then he hurt a lot of people there. But 8,500, this seems like a good bounce back spot on a course that he's been pretty comfortable at throughout his career. So I think some shares of Ricky. I'll also have some shares there of Maverick McNealy, 8,300. I think that's a fair price for him. Four top 25 finishes in his last six. He was fifth here a year ago. And then I think the guy who's probably the most, seemingly the most underpriced for me, at least, is Alex Smalley at 8,000. Is he probably going to be maybe the highest owned value play guy this week there? I mean, he's been absolute fire over the last few months. Even, you know, his last five starts, he's got four top 10 finishes there. He's been on the cusp of winning here a handful of times. Everything looking good as far as his game is concerned. He ranks third in terms of strokes gained total over the last 16 rounds. Really good with his iron play there. So love him. He's probably my favorite of the value play guys there at 8K.
I have a question for you. At 7,800, yeah. Kurt Kitayama trending very well lately, playing extremely well, probably the best stretch of his career. Yet he's been an absolute dud here in three appearances. He seems like a good course fit. I mean, he's long off the tee. It seems like it should be good. Is this time different because he's a different player? He's in good form?
I don't know. Again, this has been a course that's befuddled some of these players year in and year out, and he hasn't found his way. He'll be in my player pool this week. I'm just not sure, given the quality overall of a lot of the names that are here, that I feel comfortable making him like a flat-out core play. I don't know that I'd feel comfortable putting him into my single lineup this week just with the history of missed cuts. But, yeah, player pool-wise, he'll be there. I guess I would just feel a little more comfortable dropping down. You get to a guy there like Sepp Straka at 7,700, who the last, you know, he's made the cut here in 6 of 7 years and finished 16th, 5th, and 3rd over the last three, coming in to the week off of a 12th place finish last week in Colonial there. Looks like the irons are coming back. Looks like parts of his game are at least trending in the right direction. It's been a little bit of a choppy season for him, but this has been a spot where he's been able to get right over the years. So I guess I would prefer a guy who is a little bit more comfortable at this course.
Dropping down low 7K range, anything jumping out to you? How about Wyndham Clark coming off his win? Any interest there?
I don't know.
Is he difficult?
I have a hard time, and he has a hard time at this course too. He's been here six times. He's missed the cut in three of them. 56th, 37th, he had a 12th place finish in 2023. Is he going to be focused? Or did, you know, getting that win a couple of weeks ago maybe give him a little bit of sense of, you know, security, at least going through the rest of the season? It's also tough for me to evaluate a course like Craig Ranch, you know. So if you play really well there, does that mean, you know, a couple weeks later on a much tougher course that you're still going to have the same type of success? I don't know. I don't think so. So for me, the play right there is probably Gary Woodland at 7,300. He missed the cut at the PGA Championship, but you know that course played, Aronimink played very challenging that week. So I'm not holding that against him. Prior to that, he'd made, you know, six straight cuts, including a win. Finished sixth this past week at a much more challenging setup in Colonial. Prior to, you know, some of his health issues, this has been a spot where he had been okay. He had four top 25 finishes in his last seven starts here. So I think 7,300 there. That's a pretty nice price for somebody who's been extremely good with his ball striking of late.
I like the high 6K range this week. there's a lot of good options. I'm a Pearson Cootie guy. So at 6,900, he stands out as a good value. Nick Taylor, I think, is a sneaky decent play at 6,800.
Yeah.
Alex Fitzpatrick. You know, I think that's not a bad play either.
No, that's a great number for him. Yeah, he fell back at the PGA Championship. But again, a lot of guys had some struggles there. You know, prior to that, a couple of wins, you know, on his own on the DP World Tour with his brother, and then two really good finishes, two top 10 finishes at, you know, at Doral, and then at Quail Hollow. You know, so just the fact that he was able to perform that well on those two courses, being as tough as they are, I think that speaks volumes for where his play is at there. And yeah, it's a tricky challenge coming to Muirfield for the first time, but it feels to me like he's probably the best of the value plays that are right here in that upper mid 6K range, because it does start to drop off quite a bit. I'm not quite as interested in that lower range.
All right, hold on one second. I'm going to give you my opinion on Sung J.M. at 6,500. Hold on one second.
Nice.
All right, heads. All right. There you go.
Yeah, you just don't know. And we talked about that last week too. You know, he had fifth place, missed cut, ninth, and then missed cut. So he's had three really good finishes in his last 10 starts. He's had three missed cuts, and he's had four kind of clunkers where he made the cut, but you know, he didn't do a whole lot. The last 3 years here, last three or four years, he's got finishes of 10th, 41st, 8th, and 16th. So this is a spot where he's had some success, but you look at his game and the rolling stats, they're not terribly impressive. It's mostly just been his short game right now. So I really don't know what that portends for him coming into this week. He's cheap enough so that if you go 10% Sungjae and he pops to the upside, that could be what unlocks, you know, Scottie Scheffler on a big week. So I don't necessarily think that you have to avoid this area entirely, but trying to analyze where he might be this week in terms of his play, that's just kind of beyond me, I think.
Anything else you like down in the 6K range?
There's not really too much on the low end that stands out. I probably wouldn't go any lower than maybe a few speculative shares on like a Ryan Fox or a Sungjae. I did kind of like last week. I kind of liked Bud Colley, and then he withdrew from Colonial, and yeah. I don't know what the background of that was, but I always hate seeing that, and then they pop up the next week, and you're thinking, oh, is he okay then, or is he going to be fine? You know, I'm not real sure what to make of him. Could you get a little crazy for a couple of Tony Finau shares at 6,600 now that, you know, he's kind of fallen out of everybody's good graces?
Yes. Yes, I can. Yeah, because, again, Colonial didn't seem like a great course fit. This place has been throughout his career. It's more wide open for him. So, yes, at 6,600, I definitely can.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I think that's probably where I would make my last stand, right there in that range. I don't think it's necessary to really play around and go any lower than that.
No. What do we got coming up on the schedule here, Zachary? I'm just pulling it up. I know we got Canadian
is next week, and then the US Open the week after that, and then Travelers.
Yep. That's June.
Yeah, we're here.
Jeez.
Goes by fast.
Yeah, and then before you know it, the 3M Open.
Jeez, yeah.
Home game for us. Scottie Scheffler's coming this year. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I just hope that there's anybody else that joins him. Otherwise, he's going to be 14-5, and then the next guy's going to be like 9,500. So I don't want to deal with that mess.
Yeah.
We've seen how that's worked over the years for the highest priced guy. We've definitely had some disasters with that. So
Two more items before we get out of here. Did you see the two big deals in the NFL today?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Saw both of them.
Huge deals.
I was not surprised that at the Eagles trade. I knew that was kind of coming with AJ.
We kind of got tipped off by a reporter on that one, didn't we?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. But I couldn't believe it. I was actually kind of shocked. The Eagles, their GM, Howie Roseman, is just a fantastic general manager. I mean, to get a first-round pick for A.J. Brown there is impressive. You know, you look at like what the Vikings can't even get a second rounder for their best pass rusher. And here, 29-year-old A.J. Brown, who's maybe he has like one or two quality years left, but maybe not. I mean, it's you never know. It's the production level certainly declined quite a bit over the last two seasons. So to still get a first rounder there, I thought that was pretty brilliant for the Eagles. Because you knew the Eagles were unloading him, so I didn't even feel like the Eagles had a ton of leverage. Like, was there was there that much buzz around AJ in the NFL for first rounder? So I thought that was a great deal for the Eagles. They blow me away every year at the draft. They blow me away with the free agents that they're able to pick up and bring in. They're just a really well run franchise, which I hate for Philadelphia because I hate the Philadelphia Eagles and their fans. So great deal there, and fine. The Patriots needed to. I mean, they needed something. They going into the Super Bowl last year. I just looked at that team and I thought these guys are toast against the Seahawks. They don't have a single offensive weapon that is going to strike any sort of fear into that defense, and they didn't. And they was embarrassing. And they got pretty lucky with their run, I thought, to the Super Bowl, getting to go through Denver with the quarterback. The backup quarterback in there, I think, was pretty fortunate. And even then, barely being able to pull off a win on that one. So I thought they were real fortunate. They needed firepower. So I think it's probably an okay trade for the Patriots. I think it's a great deal for the Eagles. And then the other one, which was massive.
Yeah.
Somehow LA teams just are always able to acquire one of the best players in the league, whether it's in basketball, whether it's in baseball, hockey over the years. I mean, it's just amazing the guys that they're able to bring in there. And I didn't even see that trade. That one wasn't on my radar at all.
No.
Probably a really good trade, I think, for Cleveland. You get a young player in Jared Verse, who's shown a ton of talent, as well as a first round pick. I mean, clearly they're not ready to win this next year. So I think that's a real nice move for them. And then the Rams, who are absolutely in win now mode. And I think some of their fans were probably a little disappointed with the selection of their future quarterback in the first round, which I still think is questionable. But
stupid, yeah.
Then you go out and you make a move like that and you pick up Garrett. And now your defense looks impressive. You look like you've got the pieces on offense, so long as Puka doesn't completely fall apart here, I guess, in his personal life, which I didn't see that one coming either. So I really like both trades. I think it's the right move for both sides because this is it for Stafford, right? I mean, I think he's on kind of a 1-year deal. So it is now or never. So I think it's a smart move for the Rams. I think the talent that Garrett had was completely being wasted in Cleveland. And they still get a guy who he's not going to be Myles Garrett, but he could still be a pretty good Pro Bowler over the years. And then you get a number one pick to build on there. So I really like both of the trades. I thought we saw some smart maneuvering there in the league today.
All right. With that, we will get out of here for this evening. Thank you for joining us. The Memorial this week, best of luck. We'll be talking to you next week.
Good luck.